Radio Vermont, WDEV, takes no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the House Calls Vermont show host or their guests. The information provided during the House Calls Vermont show is offered only as a public service and should not be used as a substitute for obtaining any professional advice from a licensed professional.
WDEV presents House Calls Vermont. Hosts Jim Bradley and Chris West share their knowledge and expertise on topics specific to the opportunities and challenges of building and renovating in Vermont. Brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive, Waterbury. Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpaintingcompany.com. RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, with locations in St. Albans, Enidsburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber. There's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find where at curtislumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions, for all things basement-y. NorthernNEFoundations.com. Vermont Home Builders and Remodelers Association. HomebuildersVT.com. And Poly Construction in South Burlington. One call does it all. Online at polyconstruction.com. Your participation is encouraged. Call the listener line with questions at 802-244-1777 or toll free 877-291-8255. Now, House Calls Vermont with Jim and Chris.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Chris West with House Calls Vermont. I'm here with my colleague, Jim Bradley.
Good afternoon, everybody.
And we wanted to welcome you to House Calls Vermont. Just one more time, I'll throw that number out there, 244-1777 in the 802. If you want to talk to us, have any questions about your DIY experience, or if you want to talk about the topic of the day, and today's topic is membranes.
We worked on that one a lot, right?
Yeah, there's an old punk song, membrane, something on the brain, membrane. Anyway, we were talking last week about the contractor registry, and I know that things are moving very quickly up at Montpelier. So we just wanted to start off by touching base and reintroducing this idea so that we can get more people involved in the legislation that's coming forward. We think it's important. We hope you do too.
And one thing that's very important to both Chris and myself is the fact that this is not a political soapbox for us, and this has nothing to do about political parties. This is about doing the right things. This is about alleviating some of the pain that we have seen on the other side of the kitchen table when you're expressing to a homeowner why their house needs to be fixed because it failed miserably, how expensive that's going to be to get it right, and that's never a fun conversation. So part of
it's
that.
Especially not fun when they've already spent like $30,000
exactly.
on having a contractor come and mess it up.
Yeah, and so how do you get it right? And part of that is going to be by making sure that contractors, you know, there's some great contractors out there. The majority of them are wanting to do the right thing. But there's others that have just done it the same way they've always done it. This is the way they were taught 20, 30 years ago. The continuing education component isn't there. Writing a contract, well, give me the back of a napkin. You know, we need to do better than that.
Wink and a handshake.
A handshake. I love a handshake agreement. But in today's day and age, with a very litigious society, you got to make sure you're protected. So if harm is done to you or your home and there's no insurance policy in place by the contractor, you're left out there paying for it all and then wondering how you're going to do so. So there's a simple bill out there right now. It's an H-157. It's the contractor registry bill. Right now, your local representative in Waterbury is Tom Stevens. Feel free to give him a call and express your thoughts as to whether or not this bill should be supported. And what it does is establishes a contractor registration. It's a list of contractors that are out there, yes, what their credentials are. It has a requirement for general liability insurance and contracts for work over $2,000 or over $5,000 in total cost. But we also want to make sure it has that continuing education component as well. So many times, the education that somebody gets is on the job, or it's when the new product comes out, a salesperson may come out and say, hey, try this. And, well, what does it do?
It does everything.
It does everything. No, it costs less. Well, what else does it do? It has your name on it. Well, great advertisement, but how does it help the building? And what does it do to the building? And is it going to cause problems long term? That's why this continuing education component is so crucial. And Chris and I already have to do this with our certifications that are not state certifications, but if the state had this simple requirement, contractors would be kept abreast of the latest changes that are out there, making sure that, first and foremost, they do no harm to the building or its occupants.
And it is not a certification, right? This is just a list of contractors. If you go to the government right now, the state government, and you say, can I get a list of contractors or people out there who are, you know, building houses and fixing people's houses, they cannot give you a list. It's not something that they're tracking. And this very, very low threshold
requirements
approach,
yeah, exactly,
is a very simple ask. We're talking about less than $200 a year for a company,
yes,
to get on the registry. And once there, anybody who is a builder contractor in the state would have to be on the registry. And if they aren't and they're out building, then they've broken a rule, a law. And that's something we really need to start getting behind, because we have seen over and over again where we're like Jim's saying, across a kitchen table with someone who's been taken advantage of either on purpose or by lack of knowledge by a builder and has no recourse and is stuck holding the bag. And this is, we're not asking for licensure. We're not asking for people to be certified. We're asking for a very simple, low threshold kind of thing.
And this is something that does not have to create a huge bureaucracy. It doesn't have to be a huge expense, but it can offer the same protections and operational procedures mirroring a type of program that's already in place in the state of Vermont. One of them is through Efficiency Vermont and their contractor network, and they have some of the same requirements, and so it doesn't have to be a big ask. It's a quite reasonable approach.
Yeah, exactly. And that being said, so get in touch with your own representative.
Even senator, representative, yeah.
If you're not, so you have one of each, or you got a representative and senator. Wherever you are in the state, if you call up and say, this matters to me, then they can push that information through to Tom Stevens, who's the rep of Waterbury, who's running the committee that this is in right now.
And once again, that's Bill 157, the Contractor Registry. And that leads us into today's topic about membranes. You know, for membranes, people wonder about membranes and what are they and how do you protect a building? Because most times when people see their home, they look at finished sheetrock on the inside. They look at siding and trim and a roof on the outside, but don't know really what's going on behind the scenes until there's a big problem, whether it's in new construction or construction that's not that old or really old, and they're experiencing a problem and they're saying, okay, how do I fix this? And this is why attention to these type of membranes has to be given. And, you know, when you're looking at what will affect things in a house, first and foremost, if you've been listening to the show, water is one of the biggest damaging agents to any building material, and that comes in different forms, whether it's bulk water trying to get in, whether it's water vapor transferring from one space to another and one material to another, and how it affects that. You also have the heat component, in different temperature extremes. In our climate, especially last week, we noticed a lot of temperature extremes. And what that does behind the scenes with the first condensing layer and how that affects, once again, with the moisture component. And then also when you get the huge extremes, most people don't know that their roof on a nice sunny day, even in Vermont, can get up to 160 plus degrees easily for dark colors. And that is an extreme temperature. And how does it affect every other building material associated with that? And then once again, with the solar aspect, when it's exposed to sunlight, especially darker materials or plastics or whatever, how is that going to affect them? How are they going to hold up long term? And like with siding, does it start to cup? You know, the siding starts to cup because it's, you know, going towards the heat and going towards the sun. And how is that going to affect things for long-term durability?
Now, when we're talking about membranes, Jim and I often talk about some of these very, very modern, high-performance membranes like a Mento 3000 or
yes,
a Sega MyVest.
Yes.
But we've had membranes around for a very long time, going all the way back to building felt and tar paper. We have understood for 100+ years that having something covering up the sheathing to reduce the air infiltration is a good thing. And as we get more, I mean, you guys have all seen Tyvek and Tyvek. Well, if that's a perfectly good membrane, but it has to be properly detailed. If we're asking it to stop air from entering the house, because air brings with it moisture, and moisture can deposit on cold surfaces inside a wall, that's that first condensing layer thing, and getting a temperature below the dew point. If you have moisture hitting that, it's going to turn in from gaseous water into liquid water in your wall. Well, if you do that, we got to make sure that it can dry out, and these membranes and how they're detailed is a very important part of that.
But you have to give consideration to, once again, the entire assembly.
Yep.
Because you can actually defeat the operation of one membrane by putting another one that does something different in front of it at the wrong layer. And that's what we're talking about, is different control layers inside the assembly, which sounds a little bit complicated, but if you put the proper knowledge to this and the proper education, you're going to get a really robustly performing assembly that's going to be durable, healthy, and energy efficient at the same time. Now, some of these layers, to simplify this, can actually serve more than one purpose.
Yep.
You can have a WRB, or a weather or water resistant barrier. That's what WRB stands for. It's not a new call station, but you know, so it stands for WRB, it stands for weather control barrier, and you can have that serve as your air barrier, or you can have something behind the sheetrock, not polyethylene plastic sheathing, but you can put something behind that that serves as an air barrier.
Sometimes sheetrock itself can act as an air barrier
if it's sealed right.
And what your targets are for air tightness.
Exactly.
So when we're talking about assemblies, Jim and I often will just throw words out there, but we're really talking about from the inside to the outside, or from the outside to the inside, what are the actual materials that go up making that wall? And what is the purpose of that material? So let's just talk about a 2x4 stud. Well, a 2x4 stud is to hold the building up. That's really the only thing it's there for. And we put spaces between it so that we can, because we don't want to make a plank wall. So we were in a house a couple of weeks ago, which is from the 1810, I think it was, in Jericho Center. And when you look in the walls, we're like, well, there's no insulation in the walls. No, because the walls are solid 3-inch cut planks, and that's how they used to build them. But that's a lot of wood. When we start building lots of houses, the amount of wood you're building a house with wood planks, you can turn into three houses with 2x4 studs. So they, as we developed how we're building houses, the late 1800s when we started framing, wood is, the studs are just for holding it up. Well, on the inside, we have that nice surface that we're going to be interacting with every day. That's the sheetrock. But on the outside, we have some kind of sheathing, and that sheathing has either a tar paper or some other type of membrane on it to act as that bulk water control layer. And that's what we're talking about. So right now, although there are interior membranes, and we'll talk about that as well, we're going to start by talking about the exterior membrane. And what is it doing, and what are the properties of it that we want to look out for?
And some old school individuals have said, you know, I'm going back to tar paper. Because you know what? Tar paper used to work back in the day with these old homes. Look, they're still standing. And now I've seen failures with some of these higher end products. A lot of this is all about the details.
Yep.
You know, they say the devil's in the details. No, the building performance is in the details. If you don't get the details right as to what type of assembly you're going with, how it's being installed, are you getting all the small areas sealed appropriately? You know, if you're not doing that, you can put whatever on there and it's not going to function well, and it'll exacerbate or cause a problem that didn't happen before. So just saying, well, I'm going back to what used to work. Your building materials aren't the same. And to expect different results or more improved results by using old materials with new, it doesn't always turn out that way. So I would just say, understand the science better, understand the materials better, and then at the same time, the installation process. The installation process, you can design a beautiful building as an architect. If on the ground, if it's not put together appropriately, no matter how wonderful the design was in the beginning, it can be a total failure if you don't get the details right.
Yep.
And we have a local resident. He lives right in Waterbury. He basically just built a house, and it's a high-performance one because he had to have bragging rights within his industry. But Mark works for SIGA, and SIGA is spelled S-I-G-A, and they make a line of highly resilient, highly high-performance membranes for the house, including how you seal them appropriately. And Mark, welcome today, and thank you for being here and to discuss this topic with us.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, certainly. Well, you know, building science, people said, has changed so much. Really, it's our understanding of how a building operates and what the different effects are. That's what has evolved or increased over the years. And not everybody has stepped up to the plate to understand that and prevent a lot of these failures. When it comes to SIGA, what is their mission that you could bring to the table to help Vermonters with?
Yeah, that's a great question. SIGA, our mission statement is a world of zero energy loss buildings. We want a healthy, robust, comfortable living environment, whether it's residential or commercial. If you have to go to work and work 8 hours a day in a building, or you go home and hang out with your family and live in the building. We just want it to be comfortable, efficient, and healthy. And by doing so, we have a, like you mentioned, a host of different products to help try to achieve that goal.
What would you recommend for the outside? Not just a product name, but why is it important to keep the water out? How do you best achieve that? Some of those things, once it starts migrating through the wall, what are some of the considerations? I mean, you've been out to several of my job sites with either Hayward Design Build, my own company, or whatever, and other associates and colleagues who are interested in learning, one, how to install it, how to choose the right product. I mean, when you're looking at the whole assembly, what is your normal dialogue with a contractor or a consumer to say, this is the direction you should go?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I like to get onto the job site as soon as possible, and I like to be involved with the architect right from the beginning. I think those two stages are very important and crucial. There's different quality of installation. Unfortunately, some are better than others. I should say, fortunately, some are better than others. And there's a whole slew of different materials on the market these days that achieve similar or the same end result. So, you know, we mentioned that I work for SIGA, and I do. We have products that are exterior, say, mechanical fastened membranes or self-adhered membranes. That said, there's also products in the industry. I'll use a brand name, Zip Sheathing, Huber Zip, yep. Where you can achieve a weather barrier and tape sealed and continuous an air barrier as well. I look to make sure that the air barrier is intact and sealed and continuous. That's my main goal. And, you know, it goes twofold because, you know, moisture vapor also travels with, you know, air. It diffuses through materials and also it's transferred by heat. But 98% of vapor in water movement is through air. So again, we try to achieve a very airtight building.
So with that, Mark, you know, when we look at this, we're saying, okay, why is it important to a consumer? You know, okay, they're looking at a new house, they're looking at a renovation project, and they're saying, why should I give consideration to this? I've seen people slap up other building wraps and whatever, and but they haven't taped the seams, or why is it really, you know, helping the actual assembly? What
we're in a value engineering part of our project,
exactly.
And why is this $2,000 line item in there? Can't we get rid of that?
Sure. And that's a hard place to be in right now. You know, can you get rid of it? At times you can, but again, we want to achieve an airtight assembly.
Yep.
And by doing so, the products that we have make it easy to achieve. I'm going to take one for instance. I'm going to use our self-adhered membrane. And let's go back to like the 80s and early 90s when these other materials such as Huber Zip weren't available. People were building with OSB sheathing, plywood sheathing. They weren't
homosote.
Yeah, homosote, maybe some tar paper on top as a weather barrier, and then no air channel or air cavity in between to let any drying potential, and then they slap their cladding or their siding right on top. We come in with a self-adhered membrane, and we put it on that traditional building product again, such as OSB, plywood, CDX, whatever it might be, and I can achieve an airtight assembly in a weather barrier in one shot with
yep.
one product. So a couple of things happen. Sure, that my product might be a little bit more expensive right out of the box, but in the long run, I saved a little bit of time installing it, and I killed two birds with one stone by achieving, again, the air barrier, which is so crucial, and also that weather barrier to keep, you know, the bulk moisture out of the assembly.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, Mark, we've worked together for the past, I think, almost 7 years now on various projects,
sure.
And I'm constantly asking you to get involved. And one of the things I love about working with Mark and SIGA in general is that if I have a big project and this crew has never, ever used their products
yeah.
before, doesn't know how to do a good, you know, mid-wall window install, Mark shows up and he'll spend a lot of time with the crew working on a mock-up or working on one until they really get it. And I think that's a value added for you as a rep and for SIGA in general. What is your experience with the uptake from builders in Vermont with this type of approach?
Yeah. My title with SIGA is trainer and application advisor, and our goal is to get me on the job site and to train the trades how to install our product efficiently and effectively. It's a free of charge service. I would hope that every contractor and architect would eat that up.
Wait a second. Do you hear that, architects and builders out there? If you want to learn how to do a really good window install on one of these thick wall assembly systems or with a normal system using these types of products, give Mark a call and you'll be able to get him to come down and give your crew a training.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily my products, Chris. You know,
and that's true.
You know, there's a ton of good products in the industry, and I don't necessarily. Well, I would love everybody to use SIGA for sure, but you know, I'm an advocate. As long as you're using something, you know, quality, and then the craftsmanship is awesome. I need awesome craftsmanship.
Yeah, we need a good application.
That, Mark, one thing I've seen to be true, and you. That even if the homeowner is looking to do the project and the contractor, there may not be an architect involved, the contractor wants to do the work, but they've never seen this before, they can give you a call as a homeowner and be able to say, hey, listen, I'm doing this. Would you be willing to have a dialogue? And you get the building professionals in the mix, as you said, early and often, so that the design can be thought out. And because sometimes there's interesting junctions between different materials that people aren't thinking about, and we need to address that too. So, Mark, in doing so for something like that, how would it be best for an architect, a consumer, a contractor to best get a hold of you without blowing up your cell phone? We're not giving that out, but what is the best way for them to reach out to you and say, you know, could you talk to us about this?
Yeah, you know, my cell phone is really the best solution, other than logging on to our website and finding me that way. You know, my cell phone is always available. It's always on. I have a home office. And, you know, to be honest with you, I don't like working in my home office. I'm an outside guy. I like being on the job site.
Sure.
I like being in the architect's office in the start, in the initial phase, and going through the process so that when we do get onto the job site, it's not crystal clear, but it's clear enough that we can actually take that next step to achieve our goal.
Excellent.
Do I give my phone number out here on live?
You're welcome to, and I will. I'll be making a video of this episode, and I'll certainly be putting your contact information on there. But go ahead, throw your number out there.
Sure, my number and contact information. My name is Mark Coviello. My number is 802-917-3142, and that's my direct work line from SIGA.
Great.
Excellent, Mark.
Thank you so much for calling us from Burton Mountain. We didn't put that in there, talking about wanting to be out there. He's out there right now. I hope your children have a great day in the snow and are successful if they're competing. And thank you so much for taking time out to talk to us, Mark.
Guys, like I said, it's always a pleasure. You know, you two guys in this industry are leading the benchmark, and I really appreciate that. And I can't do it without you as well. So thanks again for everything.
Yeah, that's great, Mark. Thanks.
Have a good rest of your weekend, Mark.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy your day, too.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
And so, you know, we're looking at, once again, the membrane component and how we do a proper job of moisture control and all the other effects on these building materials. And some things that people don't realize is that, you know, they'll see a building and they'll get it wrapped in some generic brand name of house wrap, whether it's from a local lumberyard, whether it's one of the national players or whatever, and they'll put that on there, and if it's not detailed appropriately, as we mentioned, it can really cause havoc. And some things that people don't consider is how moisture does affect an assembly, whether that's going to be the bulk rainwater getting in and through or getting trapped behind even a good house wrap.
Yep.
And people didn't realize that there's a half inch of water on a piece of trim behind the siding that's trapped. And one thing that you may not be aware of, one half inch of water vertically trapped behind something like that actually puts the same force, the same pressure as applied as a 35 mile an hour wind.
The same vapor pressure.
The same vapor pressure. And so double that if you have an inch.
Yep.
So you get an inch trapped, you got hurricane force pressures pushing that water into the assembly. Then let's say it happens next to a nail head that you drove the siding in or the sheathing in with, and then it just starts to push that through. And we've seen these videos where that happens, where it starts dripping in behind the assembly, causing a lot of damage. So getting these layers not just on site, on the house, but installed and detailed appropriately is really important. You know, Chris, Joe Siebrick from the Building Science Corp has that one video, an illustration about the difference between how much vapor can diffuse through an assembly and how much can actually go through a hole, if you don't mind.
So there's a great graphic. I'll put it on the video when I make the video for this episode, and it'll be also, but it's a picture that shows a piece of sheetrock, and that piece of sheetrock with a 1-inch hole in it, if that hole lets air through it, that 1-inch hole will transport 30 liters of liquid into that wall from the inside to the outside, being transported by air during a heating season. However, if there is no hole and that moisture that's inside has to permeate through the wall, it's down to a third of an ounce of water gets through over a heating season. So diffusion is a way that moisture moves through your wall. Because of the lower vapor pressure outside and the higher vapor pressure inside, there's just more moist inside your house and less moist outside when it's cold outside. That's going to move moisture much slower through the wall than any hole. That's why we say not only for heat loss, but also for durability, air sealing is king. If you make an air-sealed assembly, we're very happy. So why do we care about the makeup of these various materials? There are a couple of materials that we've run into in the past 10 years where we're like, that is a horrible idea. A raindrop, for instance. This is a woven material, and that woven material is put out there as an air barrier, but it can't be an air barrier because it's woven. So it's an impossible attempt to try to make it do something that it shouldn't be doing.
In fact, I was one of those, as a contractor, I had a slow motion build, and that because I was at work on everybody else's houses, and so I was doubling the size of my house because we had a new baby on the way. This is about 12 years ago, and during the process, I was actually going with some of the latest and greatest materials on there, and so then I put the raindrop on the wall, and then I saw the video how if you turn this from vertical to slightly horizontal, it starts dripping through it. It's like, this is the weather barrier? How is it protecting anything? And so I made the decision to tear it off and put the right materials on there afterwards. And I did go with a ProClima product by 475 High Performance Building Products, and used their taped assembly and everything else. And it was really a phenomenal difference in the process. Right now, we do have a call that has come in from Fred Montpelier. Fred, go ahead with your question today.
It is in question stuff, but when I ripped off my clapboards on my 200-year-old house, plank house, I found that in between the boards and stuff, they put corn cobs.
Yep.
And over that, they put strips. You know, they're cheap people. They put newspaper.
Yep.
Dipped in cornstarch over it.
So oh, wow.
That all this, you know, 200-year-old newspaper and stuff. And I brought it to the Historical Society, and they said they weren't interested, that that was part of the history of my house. So.
Geez, with corn cobs and cornstarch and everything else, was it, you sure this was a building and not a baking show? I'm not really sure. It just seems...
Well, I'm just bringing you guys up to date, you know.
Well, yeah, the historical air sealing. Yes, I agree completely, Fred. I have a house that's a plank construction house from 1830s, and when I was taking the wall apart, in between the planks, I found corn cobs. I found old pieces of rag that were used as well. The nice thing about all of those materials is that they're completely vapor open. So, so if vapor was to get into the one side of the corn cob over the drying season, it would come back out. It wouldn't get trapped in there.
And that has become, Fred, kind of a stumbling block, I think, for a lot of contractors, because they have seen an assembly like yours. They've taken it apart and said, well, it's really not that bad. And yet I've seen other newer systems fail, and they think it's just the building wraps. And a lot of times what happens is they're not dealing with the moisture management component because the newer building materials, it's a short cycle, a quick growth lumber for most of your framing. And then you look at your engineered products for the sheathing. You know, when I look at OSB, it's basically vertical mulch or pre-digested lumber that's glued together and you're hoping it holds up. Once moisture hits it, it starts to mold, fall apart, degrade, and you don't have the same resiliency as these older products. So, yes, they can have a really old, leaky building with old growth lumber that's more disease resistant and not have a huge amount of problems when it comes to rot. But on the other side, we're making these new structures and we can't apply old science to this new materials. It's not going to hold up.
So my question is, Fred, when you're talking about that, what did you go back with after you took all that off? Yeah, go ahead.
Kevlar over it and then the Kevlar tape.
Oh, good. Which is a perfectly good way to go.
You know, and the clapboards from Ward's clapboard mill and stuff.
Sure.
You were having some technical difficulties with your audio there, Fred. We'll try one more time. Say that sentence again. No, it seems as if we lost Fred. Fred, if you have further questions, then please call back. Basically, what Fred was saying is, so he had a plank construction house, and I talked about that a little earlier. Before they went to framing a house with dimensional lumber, they used to actually saw 3-inch thick planks, sometimes 4 inches thick, sometimes 30 inches thick, and those would just be put next to each other in a timber frame, usually structure, and that would be the actual wall. And there was the air ceiling was just a plaster lath on the inside, the lath nailed right up against that surface, the inside surface of the wood, and then they put clapboards on the outside. The nice thing about that assembly, the reason that assembly is still in good shape, is because the air was whipping right through it and transporting any moisture away. Now that we're trying to make our houses more airtight, we need to make sure that we're allowing it to dry without using the air leakage to dry it out. And that's when we start talking about the membrane. And what Fred said is he was using a Typar. Now, Typar is about 13 perms, and perms is the metric. It's the unit that we use for describing how vapor open a material is. So if I grab a Typar, a piece of OSB, and a Mento 3000 or a Sega MyVest, the OSB has a perm rating of about 1, which means that it's
or less,
and that means it's basically a vapor retarder,
yes.
Right? And there are classes of vapor retarders. We'll get into that. It gets very technical, but basically, 1 perm, which is the metric we're talking about, is the ability of 1 grain of water, which is 1/7,000 of a pint of water, getting through 1 foot of the material with a vapor pressure on either side of 0.03 atmospheres. And that's a lot of technical jargon, and I'm sorry I had to throw that at you. But basically, it's a very teeny amount of water being able to move through the material, not because of air, not because of temperature, because the temperature on either side of this test is the same. It's solely because the humidity on one side is higher than the humidity on the other. So the only thing moving that moisture through is the fact that the moister side wants to get to the drier side to make sure that both sides are the same. Because, of course, nature loves balance. So when we're talking about OSB being 1 perm or less, we talk about a Typar at 13 perm, and then we look at something like the MyVest, which is something like 60 perm. And you can see that when we're talking about we want to stop air and bulk water, well, bulk water can't get through any of those things, but the moisture can get through as gas. And that gaseous water, that vapor, is what we're talking about. We need it to be able to dry out. If bulk water gets in, if moisture gets into the assembly because of vapor drive in the winter, winter where it's moister inside the house and less moist outside of the house, so the moisture is moving through your wall, gaseous water moving through your wall, and you need that to be able to dry back out, then we need these materials to have high perm ratings. We call that a vapor open assembly. And we've said that a number of times throughout the time we've been on the radio. What we prefer is an assembly that will dry to both sides, both to the outside and to the inside. What is acceptable is if it dries only in one direction, and that is usually to the inside because the outside is vapor closed because we're using some kind of, you know, rigid insulation, which
itself is going to dry. Well, think of a cathedral roof system. When you get a cathedral roof, you're going to have this slope ceilings on the inside, and those are going to be drywall, but on the other side of that, you're going to have asphalt shingles, which are definitely vapor closed.
Completely vapor closed. And the third option is building a vapor closed assembly, which is what Jim was just talking about, which is where we have a vapor closed material on the outside, call it OSB, and then we have poly sheeting on the inside that's also vapor closed. Moisture gets through there in some way, and then when it's trying to dry out, can't.
I know it's close to lunchtime, but Chris, that sounds like a sandwich. A vapor,
vapor sandwich.
One you don't want to eat.
No, because it's always full of mold.
But one thing that occurred to me is, you know, do most Vermonters understand how even when a newer home wall system is constructed that meets code? And remember, meeting code usually is it's the lowest grade you could possibly get, a D without getting sued, you know, for violating, you know, proper building practices. And so a code house typically in the state of Vermont currently and in the previous few decades has been a 2x6 wall filled with fiberglass with OSB sheathing on the outside, probably a building wrap of some sort that's up there, but it was slap stapled in place. It was overlapped, hopefully correctly, taped around the windows. And by slap stapling it, you usually void the warranty from the manufacturer.
Even though it has little pictures on the actual membrane showing where you should slap staple it.
Yep. And then, when that was put on, that you're supposed to be using cap nails instead of slap staples. And then building wrap was left exposed for longer than 120 days.
Which is the maximum it's supposed to be able to deal with UV.
And then it starts breaking down after you put the siding up. And then on the inside, you put poly up because everyone thought, oh, you put poly plastic, it's magic. It doesn't care if you don't tape the seams, the joints around every penetration or electrical box. It'll still perform wonderfully well. But as Chris said earlier, even in a small 1-inch by 1-inch square in a 4x8 sheet of material, gypsum board, let's say, in this case, on the interior, if there's that kind of a void, in what will transfer through there through convective transport is going to be up to 30 quarts of water during the heating. 30 liters,
right.
Excuse me. Let's get to the metric system. it'll never work. But 30 liters of water will transport through that 1-inch by 1-inch hole during the course of one heating season. So what happens when that moisture gets into this wonderful, typical Vermont wall? It gets behind that plastic. It will then migrate through the fiberglass, hits that OSB, which was once again pre-digested lumber, vertical mulch. It'll then release the moisture onto that exterior surface or the interior side of the exterior sheathing. It releases the water there. It starts to condense and freeze. And then it plays a whole host of havoc of building science issues with, you know, causing degradation of the sheathing, mold, then the indoor air quality is affected. And then you also have the actual fiberglass will start to degrade because it starts to bunch up or shrink because of the moisture making it heavier, so it can't perform as well. So you get a structure that once had an R value of a certain level is diminished.
Call it R23.
Yeah, let's say it's R23. In a few short years, it could be significantly lower than that. Yeah. So that's why doing things as they have always been done, you know, at least in the last several decades, is not proper building science. So, Chris, I know you wanted to speak to a little bit about what different types of classes of vapor retarders would be and why it's important to know that.
Yep. Now, this is something that even I have to look at a chart at, so don't get too weirded out by this. But there are three classes of vapor retarders, right? We can have things that are completely vapor closed. Things that are super vapor closed are called a class 1 vapor retarder, and it is 0.1 perms or less. And that is like polyethylene sheeting, like rubber membranes used on EFIS on roofs and things, glass, right? And something that's coated in foil. So a number of the insulation boards that we've been talking about are sometimes coated in a foil, and that has almost no vapor transport. They're not going to say none. They're not going to say it has absolutely no ability to transport, but they're going to say almost no. That point 0.1 perms or less. And then we get to our, so what we call semi-impermeable, which is 0.1 to 1 perm. And that's some oil-based paint. That's a craft-faced bat. That's that insulation that with the paper bat on it that's got the tar on the back. Vinyl wall coverings, stucco, and I would even throw in there OSB on the low end, right? And then we've got a class 3. And class 3 is 1 perm to 10 perms. We're getting more and more open when we are talking about these classes. So class 1 is very vapor closed, 2 is a little more open, 3 is 1 to 10 perms, and we're talking plywood, we're talking OSB, EPS, XPS. Most vapor open paints are like that. Heavy asphalt impregnated building paper, like your old tar paper, and a number of house wraps, like your Thai par is a good example. And then we get to vapor open stuff. And vapor open stuff is the house wraps we've been talking about, that Siga Mivest, the 475 Proclima product, that Mento 3000, but also a Tyvek. A Tyvek is a perfectly good product for that. Now, when we're talking about a zip wall, we often come back to this. Oh, by the way, I just want to throw out that that's something that's more than 10 perms, right? So when we say something is a 30 perm material, then that is obviously a vapor open
assembly. So the higher the perm rating, the more easily you can allow an assembly to dry out.
Right, exactly. And when we're talking about that vapor sandwich, which is what Jim just described, OSB on the outside, poly on the inside,
yep.
There are these teeny little holes on the inside that allow moisture to get in. And you might say, well, why can't the moisture just come back out of that little hole? And the answer is it goes in a stream, but then it diffuses into the entire bay and comes out at the entire bay. So most of that moisture, it's diffusing back out during what we call the drying season, when the moisture on the outside, the relative humidity on the outside is higher than inside your house. And we all know this. This is during the summer in Vermont, right, where you're trying to keep your house cool, but it's really moist outside. That's when the vapor in your wall that's gotten there through the natural process of vapor drive during the winter is drying to the inside. That's why it's a good idea to try to make sure that your inside relative humidity is lower than the outside relative humidity during the cooling season or during what we call the summer months of our weather. So when we have a vapor open assembly, the vapor can dry during both the winter season and the summer season because it can dry in both directions. However, if you have one of those assemblies we were talking about with a 3-4 inches of a rigid insulation on the outside that's vapor closed, OSB, and then your 2x6 wall with the fiberglass in there, and on the inside you have sheetrock, the only way that can dry is to the inside.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why when we're doing interior air barriers or membranes, we use something that's called a variable vapor open, vapor closed membrane. And that's a membrane that when the vapor is coming from the inside of the house into the wall, it has a perm of about 4 or less than that. So it's a vapor, class 3 vapor retarder or class 2 vapor retarder. But when the moisture is inside the wall trying to get out, it's a perm rating of 13. So it's vapor open. So it promotes the drying during the times of the year when that's possible, when the outside relative humidity is higher than the interior relative humidity, but it also reduces the amount of vapor that's going into the wall during those winter months.
That's why some people call it in the industry a smart vapor control layer, because, you know, once again, you're trying to control the different layers of your house, and these different layers can serve more than one purpose,
yeah.
Whether it be an air barrier, moisture control, bulk water moisture control protection, I should say, or the interior moisture. And, you know, some people would say, well, then what do I do? I mean, I got to at least meet code, right? Well, code allows for a couple different things. Code currently states you can still put plastic behind your sheetrock.
Don't do it.
Don't do it, because it's going to cause a whole bunch of problems. So what do you use? There's other products out there that, once again, are smart control, vapor control layers, which, as Chris said, depending on where the moisture drive is, it'll provide the appropriate protection for the assembly by keeping moisture out of the assembly or letting it get out to dry. That is one product. You know, Intello is one by 475 High Performance Building Products. Siga offers one as well, and I've used it successfully on many projects. It's a Myrex. That's available on their website as well, or you call Mark. There's also CertainTeed products, and I know some local people are using the CertainTeed product, but they're not taping the joints and the seams either.
It's all about the detail.
It's the details,
how well
once again.
You install it. Yeah.
And so people said, well, who's going to, my wife said this morning. She said, well, who does the checks and balances for this? I said, exactly. Yeah. The state of Vermont needs to have some type of verification process. We don't have to see the E word for enforcement, but just the verification process. But hopefully the builders who understand the products better and the science behind it and why these assemblies continue to fail. It's not a question of if water's going to get into the wall.
Yep.
It's when it does, how are you going to get it out? And like I said, it's not a question of if. Some type of moisture in some form or another will get into the wall. Do you have the ability, does the wall have the ability to set up a drying mechanism to prevent the problem from getting, you know, causing an issue?
Exactly. And on the whole front of the builder doing the right thing, we have interacted with hundreds of builders, and 99% of them are trying to do the right thing. I got a call yesterday from a builder who accidentally, just through not knowing what to do, created a building science problem in a number of his projects and called us to say, can you come take a look and give us a good advice on how to fix this?
Yep.
And our answer is yes. We're going to come and we're going to take a look at it, and we're going to give you the advice to do this. However, if we had in the state a process where our contractors were on a list, right, and they had to have a minimum amount of building science knowledge, this builder never would have made that mistake to begin with.
Exactly. And thankfully, he does have a conscience.
Yeah.
And started thinking about other projects as well. And that's kind of happened to me as I got more training through this and went to Yestermorrow for passive house certification.
How to have a back away from the cliff moment with Tim.
Yeah, definitely. Because you, as a contractor who cares about what you're doing, you don't want to be causing problems for your clients. It's not about the paycheck. It's about the process of getting them a great home in which they can live and a commodity that they can sell later with confidence that it was done right in the first place, you know. And so with that, a lot of these things may seem complicated, but if somebody is willing to invest the time, that's why we are considered professionals, whether it's just us or other builders. You're in the business to provide an appropriately designed and a detailed product to your client. And so getting the homework done, getting the education in place, and making sure you're verifying that you didn't just look at the box and say, okay, it should look like this, but it actually does look like that in the field. And if you need help in understanding a new assembly and how to better detail it, you know, because it's also, you can have your building paper done appropriately or your building wrap, but if it doesn't seal off, like the basement stego wrap or something like that, it doesn't interact with that, or it doesn't tie into the roof assembly appropriately.
Contiguous is
yes.
the term.
You know, you're supposed to be able to draw a circle around the entire building, a line, follow a pathway for the boundary, and it's supposed to be complete. And
right.
if you have breaks in that, even just on paper, you go, oh, I got a failure there. That's where it could fail, probably will fail. So you got to make sure everything is integrated appropriately. I know some builders will say, my gosh, this is too complicated, too expensive. That's in the first couple times they do it. But once they see the success and once they avoid those callbacks that are, you know, like this one contractor Chris alluded to earlier that realized, oh my gosh, there's a building science issue I've created and I need to stop this, not do it in the future. You know, to avoid those type of calls, it's about doing the proper homework up front and making sure what you're offering your client is an education as well, because you got to let them know why you're doing what you're doing and why it is important for the overall assembly, so you're not getting called back in 5 years or less for mold issues or siding issues within 10 years failing. And you can avoid that by doing it right up front.
And the reality is, none of this is rocket science. We're not asking a builder to learn a completely new way of building. We're asking for a higher level of quality on the air tightness, on understanding vapor drive, on understanding materials and how certain combinations of materials in an assembly are a good idea and some of them are bad. And once these builders, they line up and they get the information, they don't go back because they understand that the house is a system, that everything they're doing here affects how things operate there. And by broadening the discussion and saying, yes, you may actually be having a slightly higher cost for installing this membrane on this project, but I promise you, after two projects, your crew will know what they're doing. And we've set up on certain of these passive house projects, these large multifamilies, we've even set up a kind of friendly competition between the people on site saying, okay, if you guys can get this house to this air tightness, then we're going to buy you a crate of beer. And It can be something as silly as a crate of beer that any of us could buy for $20. But the idea of competing with each other to make sure the house has that air tightness and that the detailing is there, that just spurns this kind of camaraderie in trying to make a much better product.
And as Chris mentions that same thing, I've had the same experience with Peregrine Design Builds Crew. Also, Roundtree Construction, they're local builders. They do phenomenal
work. Both members
work.
Of the VBRA?
Yes, the Vermont Builders and Remodelers Association. But both of these, when we got on site, we did the blower door tests, and some of these we did the actual fog check as well. These crews wanted to stay around and watch. They wanted to know, how tight do we get our building? And when they saw the fog check that we did that shows leaks from the outside as you pressurize the house and you put the theatrical fog inside and all the smoke as it tries to get out, and you see these weak points, and then everyone just jumped up. They got the ladders up. They were sealing those spots.
That's right.
And next time, they're not going to make those same errors, and they're going to address it differently. So it's not a lack of willingness to learn. It's, are the right things in place to allow for that learning to occur, which kind of goes right back to that whole thing with the contractor registry and asking for people to have that are in this field to have continuing education. Right now, we do have a call from Dave in Pittsfield. Dave, go ahead with your call, your question.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, sir. Yourself?
Hey, I really enjoyed the program. It's a great way to spend a Saturday afternoon.
Hey,
good,
thanks.
Sir. We think so as well.
Hey, so I guess my question is, in your opinion, if we're looking at a cross section of a home, looking at the exterior walls, what would be, in your opinion, the correct assembly? I guess from the interior all the way out to your choice in siding. So that would be sheetrock, framing, insulation, vapor barrier, sheathing, and finish.
New construction, right? We're talking, it doesn't exist. We're starting from nothing. We don't have to deal with an existing situation, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll take the answer off the air and have a good listen. I appreciate it.
You're
right,
very
Dave,
welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you for calling.
And so, Dave, you are basically highlighting the thing that I went through personally on my addition to my house was, what is the perfect wall? And the perfect wall was migrating a little bit in its definition for many years, and now they've really settled on something a little bit more defined, well-defined. But it doesn't mean it's just one material. It's the process of how that assembly performs and what safeguards are in place. First and foremost, from the sheetrock back. Because sometimes people will put cladding up there, wood cladding. But, you know, you got to make sure that from the sheetrock back that you have an effective air barrier. And depending on where you want to establish that, but if you want to establish that right behind the sheetrock, you've got to make sure that you have vapor control at that area as well. So that the higher humidity from the inside during the winter months does not want to push, or can't really be pushed to the inside of that wall cavity and get stuck. So that means you put a membrane in there, an intelligent membrane, or you do sheetrock air sealing, where you glue the sheetrock to all the studs all the way around, seal all your boxes, and then use a low perm paint on the actual sheetrock, and that will achieve that as well. But there's a lot of work there as well. But you get one of those smart vapor control layers behind there, like a CertainTeed product, a SIGA product, the Myrex, or the Intello by 475 high performance building products, and you get that in that plane behind the sheetrock against the studs, covering your insulation and also sealing it at all the boxes and all the tops, the bottoms, the seams. You're sealing it appropriately with the right materials, and you're not just stapling wildly and putting holes in your product, which kind of defeats the purpose. And then from there, you're looking at how you're going to frame that wall cavity. You could do a 2x6, you could do a double stud, you could do TJIs. I've seen people do that in dense packets. So it really depends then what
you can
your structure.
You can do a 2x4. Yeah, the perfect wall is a wall that dries.
Exactly.
A wall that meets code and dries in both directions. What is the makeup of that wall, Dave, is a very good question. And some builders like to build a certain wall. And
yes,
they call you up and say, I don't want to build that wall you're telling me about. I want to build the wall I'm used to building, that I'm comfortable building, and I would like you to tell me how to do that in a way that leaves it vapor open on both sides. So let me give you a couple of examples. We prefer having, let's say we're going to build a mix of a fluffy, rigid insulation package. So we can, instead of a 2x6 wall, we can go down to a 2x4 wall. 2x4 wall from the inside, sheetrock, intelligent membrane,
yep,
2x4 stud wall with rock wool between it, sheathing on the outside, and that can be a zip sheathing or a plywood. We prefer plywood because it's vapor open.
And that 2x4 wall is a service cavity for your plumbing and your electrical at the same time.
Absolutely. And then you put the same R value that you have in that stud wall, that R13. We need that on the outside. And then you put that R13 on the outside. Now, personally, I'm really interested in these vapor open rigid wood products. products like the Gutex that we now have a factory up in Maine that's going to be producing that type of, it's a fiber wood product that's packed with wax. It's vapor open and has an R of about 3.5, which is about the same as fiberglass or a rock wool on the outside. So we'd add that, and that would be one assembly. And that's a super great assembly. On the outside of that rigid, we would put a weather-resistant barrier.
WRB.
And that would be like a Tyvek. Just throw
it
out there.
A Minto.
And then we'd put 1x4 strapping on the outside for a breathing channel. That's a rain screen, we call that. 3/4-inch rain screen.
And you place that usually at the same delineation of your interior studs, and you screw through the strapping, through the insulation, through the sheathing, into the studs so you have proper attachment
exactly.
at the same time.
And then you put whatever you want on the outside. Is that going to be
cladding.
Cementation boards? Is it going to be clappards? Is it going to be shiplap, locally milled saw, you know, hemlock, whatever. That's a great wall. So the answer to the question is there are a lot of options for what happens in the wall, but we want to look at the perm ratings of all the materials and make sure that moisture that's going to get in the wall can dry out. That's the answer.
And to be as concise as possible with very limited time left, it's whatever happens with the framing and the insulation part of it, that's one thing that you got to meet code and got to make sure it performs well. But on either side of that, the interior and the exterior, as Chris said, always make sure it dries. So at the exterior, get that great WRB, get it detailed right, get a rain screen in place that allows for proper drainage and drying behind your siding so everything lasts appropriately. On the inside, make sure you're dealing with any type of vapor intrusion from the inside area into that wall cavity by getting the sheetrock done appropriately or the cladding with the appropriate air barrier and vapor control layer in place. You get that, and you're going to have a great performing wall assembly, no matter if it's a 2x4 wall with insulation on the outside or double stud wall, which could be 14, 16 inches wide. Doesn't really matter there as much as it does if you have that ability to dry in both directions.
So we're at the end of the show. We're even a couple of minutes over. Fortunately, Joel is a wonderful guy and lets us bite into his show a little bit there. I do want to point out that next week we're going to be talking about roofs, and we'll dive into the right roof. Roof assembly, because Dave's question about wall assemblies is just one part of the equation. If we're going for warm roofs, we've got a horror story that we visited a house a couple weeks ago we can share with you.
From one of our listeners.
So we are very thankful for your listening. We're sorry about last week. They had basketball. They're going to have basketball also on March 6th, though we won't be here on the 6th, but we'll be here next week and for the 4 weeks after that until the end of our season, and we'll be talking about roofs, icicles, and ice dams.
And one last thing, remember the contractor registry bill. Get a hold of Representative Stevens here locally, Tom Stevens in Waterbury, and it's Bill H-157. Give your input regarding whether or not you think that the contractor should be registered, have continuing education, use contracts, have insurance, simple little things.
And if you don't live in the area, contact your personal state representative, a senator and rep, and give your opinion on that. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, everybody.
House Calls Vermont, brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive, Waterbury. Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpaintingcompany.com. RK Miles, your neighborhood lumber yard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber, there's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find where at curtislumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions, for all things basementy. NorthernNEFoundations.com. Vermont Home Builders and Remodelers Association, homebuildersvt.com. Poly Construction in South Burlington, one call does it all, online at polyconstruction.com. Join us again next Saturday at 12:30 for House Calls Vermont.